This time, the spell worked. I should have known where the fetches had found the swiftest passage from their realm to Chicago. It was one of those things that, in retrospect, was obvious. Charity's minivan pulled into the little parking lot behind Clark Bell's run-down old movie theater. It was out of view of the street. The sun had risen on our way there, though heavy cloud cover and grumbling thunder promised unusually bad weather for so early in the day. That shouldn't have surprised me either. When the Queens of Fairy were moving around backstage, the weather quite often seemed to reflect their presence. Murphy pulled her car in right behind the minivan and parked beside it. All right, Murph, Thomas, I said, getting out of the van. Fairy fighting, 101.
I know, Harry, Thomas said.
Yeah, but I'm gonna go over it anyway, so listen up. We're heading into the Never Never. We've got some wicked fairies to handle, which means we have to be prepared for illusions. I rummaged in my backpack and came out with a small jar. This is an ointment that should let you see through most of their bullshit. I went to Thomas and slapped some on him, then did Murphy's eyes, and then did my own. The ointment was my own mixture, based on the one the gatekeeper used. Mine smelled better, but stained the skin it touched with a heavy brown-black tone. I started to put the jar away. Charity calmly took the jar from my hands, opened it, and put ointment on her own eyes. What are you doing? I asked her.
I'm preparing to take back my daughter, she said.
You aren't going with us, I told her.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not. Charity, this is seriously dangerous. We can't afford to babysit you.
Charity put the lid back on the jar and dropped it into my backpack. Then she opened the sliding door on the minivan and drew out a pair of heavy-duty plastic storage bins. She opened the first and calmly peeled out of her pullover jersey.
I noted a couple of things. First, that Charity had won some kind of chromosomal lottery when it came to the body department. She wore a sports bra beneath the sweater, and she looked like she could have modeled it if she cared to do so. Molly had definitely gotten her looks from her mother. The second thing I noticed was Charity's arms. She had broad shoulders for a woman, but her arms were heavy with muscle and toned. Her forearms especially looked lean and hard, muscles easily seen shifting beneath tight skin. I traded a glance with Murphy, who looked impressed. I just watched Charity for a minute, frowning. Charity took an arming jacket from the first tub. It wasn't some beat-up old relic, either. It was a neat, quilted garment, heavy black cotton over the quilting, which was backed by what looked a lot like Kevlar ballistic fabric. She pulled it on, belted it into place, and then withdrew an honest-to-God coat of mail from the tub. She slipped into it and fastened half a dozen clasps with the swift assurance of long practice. A heavy sword belt came next, securing the mail coat. Then she pulled on a tight-fitting cap made in the same manner as the jacket, tucking her braided hair up into it, and then slipped a ridged steel helmet onto her head. She opened the second tub and drew out a straight sword with a cruciform hilt. The weapon was only slightly more slender and shorter than Michael's blessed blade, but after she inspected the blade for notches or rust, she flicked it around a few times as lightly as she would a rolled-up newspaper, then slid the weapon into the sheath on the sword belt. She tucked a pair of heavy chain gloves through the belt. Finally, she took a hammer from the big tub. It had a steel-bound handle about 4 feet long and mounted a head almost as large as a sledgehammer's, backed by a wicked-looking spike.